It's about 26 minutes after the hour, this time on a winsome Wednesday morning, and we're joined by Dr. Don Clark. Don is a biochemist, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, and a resident of Garden Valley, Texas. And he's been, under the weather, Don, the last couple of days?
Yes, indeed. I've been under the weather. And it's a... it's a mystery as to what exactly I have. I mean, it started out kind of as a common cold with the runny nose, and
that was Christmas Day, right? That was Christmas Day.
Happy Christmas present.
Yeah, I'm all congested and have a slight runny nose, and a little bit of fatigue, not too much. On Sunday, I was really out of it. I got hit pretty hard, and then my nose was running almost continuously, and I was just really all congested and beginning to cough a little bit. And then by Monday, I was the runny nose had. The faucet had been turned down a little bit, but then I started coughing like crazy.
And so, it reached your chest, apparently, yeah.
Yeah, so, then yesterday when I was supposed to be on the program, I couldn't wake up. It was like, man, a ton of bricks. I woke up at 6 o'clock, took some cough medicine, and that must have really put me out, or else the fatigue just hit me all of a sudden. And I didn't wake up till 10 o'clock. And then even at 10, I had to force myself to get out of bed. So I really had a lot of fatigue yesterday, which kind of waned by the end of the day. So this morning I'm up and about. Obviously still congested. Don't have the runny nose like I used to. My sinuses are still a little.
Well, now here's the question, and we brought this up in the communications on Monday, some emails. Was it a common cold, or was it some form of COVID?
Yes. That's a good question. I did one of those home antigen tests on Sunday, which would be day two of whatever this is, and it turned out negative. Now, it turns out, do self-research, you come up with, the at-home test is not very reliable for the Omicron variant of COVID. It's not, it's showing a lot of false negatives, if you will. So my test came up, perfectly negative, but I was definitely had many of the symptoms of COVID, not all of the symptoms, but I did over the course of this last 5 days here have had various symptoms that would point to, maybe I did have a touch of COVID. I'm not really sure. So without doing the CPR test and getting that done, I can't really answer the question for sure.
Well, Dr. Jim has decided it was the Omicron. It's come and gone, virtually. You're on the mend now. Another day or two, you'll be back to your old feisty self. So take two aspirin and call me in the morning.
Yes, let's hope so. The COVID itself has this sneaky pattern of people start feeling good on day 5 and 6, and then on day 7 they can get hit really hard with a hyperimmune response, which puts them back down again, and that's the more dangerous part of it.
But that experience would have come probably as a result of the Delta variant, which is still around.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah,
and so we'll see. I'm feeling certainly much better, and I can at least function today. Mm-hmm. Whereas yesterday, I wasn't. I wasn't really doing very much. I did take the dog for a walk in the middle of the day, but I almost had to force myself to do that. Mm-hmm. So
take it easy. Don't press things, but. And we should make it clear that you have not been vaccinated, chose not to for very good reasons, and you've done a lot of research as a a veteran of the pharmaceutical industry and a biochemist. There's a lot of news up there today about various aspects of COVID, some of them accusatory that that the federal government has actually clamped down on the distribution of
the monoclonal antibodies.
Thank you. Yeah, that I have trouble with trouble remembering that. And in fact, they did cease distribution from several companies, and only one going now. I know Texas is short of that particular therapeutic. So that's one issue that the federal government has apparent. I can't tell you they botched it because I don't know what the reasoning was. They claim it was because these particular monoclonal antibodies were less effective against Omicron than Delta, but Delta's still out there. Why stop distribution of this thing?
Well, and why do that and not stop the vaccines, because they are less effective against the Omicron? So, you know, it doesn't make any sense. There's no rationale, really, I think, anymore to our fellow government health agencies. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Here's another example. CDC story this morning. Just last week, they were saying that Omicron was 73% of new cases in the country. Now they're saying, no, we weren't sure of that. It's really about 22%. But, oh, wait a minute. Now 90% or more of the cases in some regions of the country. This is not the straight scoop. So if they know it's not accurate and not dependable, why even put it out?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know what their policies are, or maybe they don't have any policies regarding this, because they really haven't dealt with it into the mass scale that we have today.
CDC doesn't seem to have a body of scientific data at its fingertips,
or they're just not divulging it. This morning, I stopped by my favorite local coffee shop, which is in the same building as a pharmacy, and it has an urgent care on the back. This was after my workout, but one of the nurses from the urgent care ran in to grab her coffee, and she said, people are showing up. She said, they have laryngitis, and immediately they think they've got COVID. And she said, we are doing far more testing than we need to, because people are panicked because of what they hear in the media, you know, and they're thinking any little sniffle is going to put them in the hospital. And she said, what our government is doing is really wrong. And I totally agree.
There is.
I would agree with that, too, because it's, you know, this fear mongering that has gone on for the last 2 years is totally wrong and uncalled for, and all of the lockdown measures have been proven not to be effective. So why are we continuing with this, other than there obviously must be another agenda? But we don't want to talk about that today.
No, we don't.
We want to talk about, I don't know, what do you want to talk about, Jim?
Well, self-defense. Now, we discussed an article from Mercola that talks about quercetin, which we talked about on previous programs, and he gave a whole list of vitamins and the amounts and so forth. But you've got your own regimen. Why don't you tell us about what you do to protect yourself, not having been vaccinated? How are you protecting yourself by boosting your immune system? What do you take?
Oh, well, high concentrations of vitamin A, first of all. Vitamin D. Vitamin D is, there's vitamin D receptors pretty much on every cell in your body, and it has multiple functions, but it has a tremendous function boost for your immune system. Your immune system can't really work very well without an adequate amount of vitamin D. And early studies have shown, well, not early studies, but studies have shown that people who had less than 20 nanograms per mil of vitamin D in their blood were 80%, about 83% more likely to be hospitalized from COVID. That was from the Alpha, the first.
Yeah, that was
COVID.
A very early finding, yeah.
And so, you know, I have been taking vitamin D for a while. And the other thing, you know, you can take 5,000 units, you can take 10,000 units, you can take 20,000 units. But what you really need to do is measure the vitamin D in your blood. That's the most important measure, because both my wife and I were taking 5,000 units, and we did a blood test through Grassroots Health. I believe it's grassrootshealth.org. Anyway, they her blood levels came up at 60 nanograms per mil, which is a great level to be. Anywhere between really 40 to 60 is a pretty safe level, but it could go as high as 100, and you still won't have any issues from vitamin D toxicity. In mine came up 30. And so we're taking the same amount. Now, I wouldn't say I'm twice the weight of my wife, but, you know, I wasn't metabolizing it or absorbing it as much as she was. And so I boosted the level to 10,000 units, and that got me up to 60 nanograms per mil. And so it really depends how much sun you get. Of course, in northern states and everything, you probably get a lot less sun than we do down here, especially during the summer. So, you know, get your vitamin D levels measured so that you know, in your blood, so that you know exactly.
Well, how often should you be testing your blood? Daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly?
Oh, no. No, they recommend.
Quarterly?
They recommend every 6 months.
Okay.
Every 6 months. And the other thing about vitamin D is it takes about a week. So you take it today, and then next week you're going to have the compound metabolized to the active form. Mm-hmm. So, you know, vitamin D3 is the one that you need to take. Mm-hmm. And it's usually paired with K2, which is fine. But vitamin D3 and you... you know, through your metabolic processes, it doesn't convert it to the active form. It takes it, like I said, it takes about a week. So you want to get that in your system. It's a fat soluble vitamin, not a water soluble vitamin. The formulations that are more in an oily based formula are much better absorbed than just taking a little tablet of vitamin D, D3, for you. So that's in my list, that's number one. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to get your vitamin D levels up. That helps boost your immune system. The whole game here is to keep your immune system up and running to the greatest extent that you can to optimize your immune system. Because you can go through and do all of these things, but if your immune system is down, you've got multiple problems, including cancer. By the way, cancer is. I believe is really a disease of the immune system and not necessarily a disease of the rogue cells. We each and every one of us have rogue cells that are being formed each and every day, and it's only the immune system that it's keeping those cells in check. But if our immune system gets down, for example, we've got a greater chance of those rogue cells multiplying and getting out of control. So keeping your immune system up is a good thing to do. The other types of vitamins that, of course, a mineral, a zinc, you've heard a lot about zinc. I have a multivitamin pack that I get from a company called ID Life. Not that I'm necessarily promoting ID Life, but it's a company here in Texas, but they produce, you actually do a DNA test, and it's based on the DNA test, they can say, oh, you know, you're in this range or that range for various measures based on a genetic makeup, and then that kind of gets you in the starting point of the type of vitamins you should take and how much of each. And, you know, they put together little packets, divided them up into morning and evening packets, And it makes it quite convenient to take to get all the vitamins and minerals and nutrients that you need in order to keep your body running efficiently and also with that. So in those packets, for me, for example, my zinc levels are up at the total zinc. Elemental zinc, not these like zinc sulfate, for example, about 225 milligrams of zinc sulfate equals about 50 milligrams of elemental zinc, and it's the elemental zinc number that you want, and not the total weight of the tablet or the amount of zinc that's in there. So it depends on the type of zinc you want. But yeah, my zinc levels are up at 60-65 a day, depending on the type of formulation that I'm taking. So zinc is a good one. Zinc is actually used to in your body, in your immune defense, and it helps block the replication, for example, in this case, we're talking about COVID. It helps to prevent the replication of the virus inside the cell.
So it keeps the virus count down, is what it does.
Keeps the virus count down, yes. Go ahead.
So I was just going to say, because you're a biochemist and you have this background, for instance, my compounding pharmacist recommended zinc-zyclinate for me, which is it's a biglycinate, but it's a chelate. What's the difference when you're reading labels like this? This doesn't necessarily say elemental zinc.
Right.
So how do I know what I'm looking for?
Right. It's usually expressed like on the front label. It usually might have 15 milligrams or 50 milligrams or 20 milligrams, whatever. That's usually expressed as elemental zinc. Then you can go to the back label and say, okay, you've got zinc glycinate or whatever, and
it says 20 milligrams.
Yeah. So that's a good question. Then you'd have to really look at that label and see. But
I could ask the pharmacist. I assume because this is their particular compounded.
Oh yeah.
Form, and he said it was more easily assimilated.
It is the organic, the chelated organic metals, for example. Even this goes for whether it's calcium or magnesium as well. I mean, the chelated, the organic chelated metals are much more readily absorbed than your oxidate type of compounds.
D3 and then zinc, and what's next on the list?
You want to get some good B complexes are also very, very important, and so you want to take good formulated B compounds. You take those in the morning; they'll keep you up at night because it revs up your
metabolism.
And so if you take the bees at night, you might have a little trouble sleeping. So I usually take those. They're in my morning pack, and it's just a little capsule.
Okay, now I'm familiar with B12. Is that a compound, or is that just one kind of bee?
It is a specific compound, okay. And the Bs are various compounds. There's B6, and there's a whole slew of them, and a good, balanced, formulated B mixture is what you want, not just the B12 or the B6 or the B3, whatever you want. You want all of them in there, and like I said, better to take them in the morning than sometime else. Okay. Yes.
That's another question. Is it best to spread out all these different things you're taking, or can you take them all at once?
Well, I take them. It depends. It depends on what it is as to when I take them. I take them either with my breakfast in the morning because, your stomach is basically wanting, when you're eating, you're wanting nutrients. I mean, that's what the process is doing. So to take them off off of a regular schedule of eating doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So I take my morning vitamins with my breakfast, and then I take my evening vitamins with my dinner. And so those are the two times that I take them. And it, like I said, it depends on what I'm taking. Like your natural oils, like vitamin E and omega-3s and E's, you'll take in the evening because you get more benefit out of them, you know, when you're sleeping than, you know, during the day. So mm-hmm. those are in my evening pack, and some other things are in my evening pack. But most of my vitamins actually are in my morning pack.
One of the things I have, just a comment on the B vitamins, because of some health issues, the doctor has recommended a methyl B12 and a methyl folate because it's a precursor and it's more easily assimilated. Does that sound familiar to you?
Well, they can be. There again, it depends on the bioavailability, and methylating them can be like a pro vitamin, for example, or a pre-vitamin, where it has to be metabolized within your system, but it gets absorbed much much better than the, you know, a lot of these vitamins, unfortunately, are synthetic, and we would like them all to be natural. And in the best is obviously in the food, because it's in the natural matrix. But unfortunately, our food is not produced like it used to be when the old farmers were around. It's all mass produced, and the chemical fertilizers are nowhere. I mean, yes, it produces a nice, pretty plant, but you don't have the nutrients in that plant that you used to have if you're throwing manure, for example, on the ground and growing your plants that way, the more natural way. And so unfortunately, we got to take these vitamins because their food sources are deplete in these types of things.
By the way, there is now in the chat window at BrokenRoadRadio.com a link to IDLife.com, which is the site that Dr. Don referred to as a source for vitamins, and you mentioned they do a DNA test. This particular site, for some reason, says LindyLou19.IDLife.com, but it seems to be their homepage, so you can click on that and track them down.
Well, it's like one of those clubs, you know, I'm a distributor, although I haven't sold to anyone.
I see. Yeah.
And I'm not promoting that. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying as an example, you know.
One of the things you mentioned about the difference between your size and your wife's size and what's required, I think all too often somebody said you need 10,000 units of C and 40,000 of zinc and stuff. But the size of an individual and just general health, like you said about the DNA, makes a difference in how you assimilate what you're taking. So if you can find a good functional medicine doctor who actually understands these things rather than just throwing pills at problems, it makes a world of difference. But here's the thing. It's like getting grass-fed beef or organic vegetables. I used to think it wasn't such a big deal, and since I've been working with this doctor, it is important, and it's going to cost more, and so you have to weigh your options. But if you're eating stuff that you're not getting nutrients from, you're wasting money that way as well, as far as I can see.
You are, and if you can help keep yourself healthy longer, you're saving money in the end, really, with all of this. So you got to look at this as an investment in your health. It's like a health insurance that actually benefits you. Because if you stay healthy, then and not get sick, or at least so sick, I mean, whatever this is, whether it's a common cold or whatever, I'm getting over it pretty quickly.
Seems that way.
And I'm not, you know.
I should ask, how long have you been on this vitamin regimen? How long have you been doing it? Just since COVID or for years?
A couple of years now. Okay. So Other things, I mean, in the vitamins, of course, vitamin C, and, take 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C a day. If you get sick, boost it up to 3,000 milligrams. Some of the treatment protocols, for example, for COVID is intravenous injections of 25,000 to 50,000 milligrams, or that's 25 grams or 50 grams of vitamin C. So you'd be hard-pressed to find a hospital that will do that, but some doctors who in the know will treat with that. Now, why vitamin C? Because obviously it's an antioxidant type of vitamin, and it too is involved in your immune system. So and it's perfectly safe even at the higher levels. Now, I wouldn't take 25,000. I wouldn't take 25,000 milligrams of vitamin C every day, because you can get kidney stones from vitamin C at that level. But taking 1,000 milligrams is not out of the question for that.
Where does quercetin fit into the picture?
Well, quercetin is a natural compound. It actually comes from green leafy vegetables and other things. Capers, for example, if you go in, you have an Italian dinner and you get chicken piccata or veal piccata, for example, and you get these little green buds that are in the piccata sauce. Those are capers, and they are very, very rich in quercetin. So quercetin is a natural compound. Excuse me. Quercetin acts, has a similar mechanism of action of hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. Quercetin, for example, helps to get zinc into your cells. Zinc outside your cells does you no good. You got to get it inside the cells, so there's got to be a carrier molecule that helps get it inside the cells, and quercetin will do this, but it's a natural compound. So,
and that's readily available in health food stores. I've seen it all over, and it's all over the internet right now too. So,
yes, it is, and between 250 to 500 milligrams per day of quercetin is a good with your zinc is a good, it's called an ionophore. Those type of molecules like hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin are called ionophores because it helps get the zinc into the cells. Now, the problem with quercetin, though, is that it's not very effective in your lungs, because it doesn't get to your lungs unless you use really high concentrations of quercetin. So if you're sick and have COVID, for example, I would certainly recommend hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin.
If you can get it. How do you find a hospital that pays more attention to medical advice than political advice?
Well, you probably won't find a hospital. You got to find individuals either working within a hospital or in their own practice that believe in the Zelensky protocol, for example, or Peter McCullough. If you search under Peter McCullough, you could find all the protocols, and they have a patient guide for COVID, for example, that they've put together that has a link to possible doctors within your area that will actually prescribe hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. Or they can point you to the right people that will. So,
okay, one more question here, because we're limited a little bit by time. Although we can go on, but I don't want to wear you out here. You're recuperating, for Pete's sake. There's a report out.
Very quickly.
There's a report out now that more than 150,000 people have been killed by COVID vaccines. This is a report accumulated off this adverse events reporting. Is that right-wing wacko stuff, or can you have confidence in that number?
Well, here's the they're getting their data from the VAERS database, which is the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System set up by the CDC, where either an individual or a doctor or a nurse can report adverse events following the vaccine administration. And so it is monitored by the CDC. The problem with that database, I think it's showing something like, I haven't looked today or recently, but the last time I looked, it was like 17,000 deaths or so of associated with the vaccine. So how do you get to 150,000? Well, by the fact that historically, only a like a 5% reporting efficiency for this particular database that we have here in the United States. So they figure that these folks who have actually done this analysis and looked at this over a period of years, you know, suggest that the underreporting is one report for every 20 incidences. So that's a 5% report rate, and so they figured that the actual death rate from the vaccines have been between 146 to 187,000 vaccine associated U.S. deaths between February and August of this year, which is not very a long period of time, really. And so why aren't we hearing anything about this in the news? Because if you remember the H1N1 you know, flu virus, and that vaccine, there was a vaccine produced against the H1N1. They took it out of circulation after 32 deaths. And here we're possibly up to 150 or more, 1,000 deaths.
Well, that increase in deaths would parallel the increase in the number of vaccinations. I mean, the two graphs run together, don't they?
They do. And that was another thing they pointed out in this article. For example, they based on, for example, Pfizer's own phase 3 trials, out of 22,000 people vaccinated, one person was saved in the treated group versus the control group. So you had two people die in the control group, and you had one person die in the treated group. Both groups had about 22,000 people in them, patients in them, and so it's 1 in 22,000 is the effective rate of the vaccine. Now, all of the people that have been vaccinated, you know, 220 million people have been vaccinated, that would be 10,000 people's lives saved by the vaccine. Comparing that to 150,000 people who have died as a result of the vaccine, that's killing people at the rate of 15 people to one saved.
Bottom line is
with the vaccine. So it's we've got some problems in this country, as well as around the world.
Well, that may reflect the general state of health of Americans too, and their immune systems generally.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
It'd be interesting to compare our death rate with death rates in, say, Africa, where people may eat a more natural diet, live closer to the ground than we do here, and different food sources. I'm sure there's somebody looking at that.
Well, there's already been studies, excuse me, that have shown that you know, the Africans are doing better than we are. Mm-hmm. They don't have the vaccine. They don't have any of these things. They certainly aren't getting a completely healthy diet, you know, because one can't afford it, but they're doing better. So why are they doing better? Well, they're exposed to many more disease elements, if you will, than we are, especially younger in life. So they've got those people that survive have a much better immune response than we do.
Interesting. Well, listen, we've gone past the hour, and that's not tragic, but we need to tend to it here, we should pick this up again with you, I guess, next Tuesday. Hopefully you'll be available.
Yes, let's see. I may be in Baton Rouge, but okay. I kind of doubt it. We'll see.
Okay.
Yes, I should be available.
Okay. Dr. Don Clark, a member of the board of Creation Moments. I want to mention their website. It's creationmoments.com. And there you won't find much about COVID. You'll find a whole lot about the biblical story of creation, though. And it's scientific-based mm-hmm. information that I think you can find interesting, and two, find it reliable. Creationmoments.com is the website. Don, thanks so much. Appreciate all this information, all the insights. And again, there's that ID Life link in the BrokenRoadRadio.com chat window there. You can click on it and investigate for yourself and see if they might be of service to you. Don, take good care of yourself. Rest up, and we'll look forward to next Tuesday.
Well,
rest and fluids.
Yeah, that's it. Take a lot of fluids. That's right.
Bye-bye.
I'm trying to do that. Hopefully I'll be all better with this by next week sometime.
Okay. We'll talk to you then.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
That's so